Should J.J. McCarthy bypass the Viking season and head straight to Canton? All of the...
That's fantastic.
All of the reports out of camp this week is that he is ready to go. He is the first Vikings preseason game, a little under a week from today. It's next Saturday, and J.J. McCarthy. Listen, I've watched the videos, I've read the stuff, I've seen people's reactions. Everyone loves what he brings, and he's talented, and he has the mental poise and the makeup to be the guy. But I'm here to tell you, once again, everybody, please, 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 do not expect or don't hope that you're going to see him this season. And I've read these people's posts, and everyone says, well, maybe by this game he'll get in there. Maybe by this game he'll get in there. I don't want to see J.J. McCarthy take a snap all season. Okay? And we can clip that soundbite. You play it back to me when I'm wrong. But I'm telling you. If things are going well, if things are going the way Vikings fans want them to go, you should not want to see J.J. McCarthy take a snap this season, Pete. I just don't think it's realistic. If it's going the right way in my mind, he doesn't play at all.
It's an interesting thing because this is one of the few times, Dave, that you and I disagree. So
okay, that's good. Let's do it.
So here's what I'm going to throw out to you. So we decide we're going to take a quarterback, and he's the highest quarterback the Vikings have ever taken. It's the 10th pick in the first round. So We take a quarterback. Now, are the Vikings – let's just sort of back up for a second, and Charlie, you can jump in too. So Here's my thought. When you look at the Vikings team, do you think that they are a bottom quarter, or do you think they're sort of somewhere in the middle right now
Somewhere in the middle to bottom quarter.
So I definitely think they're somewhere in the middle. When you look at their record, and let's go back. Let's look at what we looked like when we actually had a quarterback that, obviously we think he's great. Kirk Cousins did a great job. A lot of people thought he was going to be overpaid, everything else, but he lived up to the hype and did a very, very good job and had a great season going before he tore the Achilles. So here's a guy who got sacked 17 times in 8 games. Not that bad. I look at our offensive line. Now, I have a different opinion than others do when it comes to the offensive line, but we have what a lot of people think is one of the better offensive lines. You've got Darrisaw up front. You've got Ingram and O'Neal at the other tackle on the other side. You've got Reisner at guard. You've got great running backs, I think, because I really like Aaron Jones. I think the world of him. C.J. Ham is one of those just white elephant type fullbacks that's out there in the league, because not everybody even has a fullback, but he's big, he's strong. You've got JJ, you've got Addison, you've got Naylor. He has all the tools in front of him right now, and he's never gone anywhere where the stage is too big so far. So, I go all the way back to Nazareth back in Chicago when I lived there, where he played, had a great record. He was a winner. He went undefeated at IMG. He goes up to Michigan and starts 3 years and does an incredible job there. I think he's ready. When I watched him last Saturday, not this yesterday, but last Saturday, he looked like the veteran, and Darnold looked like the guy looking at the guy that, he's trying to figure out what he needs to do. I'm not kidding when I say that. I believe it. He has swag. He's got all of that.
He does.
And I agree with Randy Moss, who if you saw that clip earlier this week, he said, look, you draft somebody in the first, second, or third round, they should start. Yeah. They should start. Now, the one pushback I would say is if you draft a really high quarterback because your team is terrible, that's a different story because you might not have that offensive line. You might not have all the tools. I think J.J. has the tools. Now, I'm not trying to say the Vikings are a Super Bowl team at all. That's not what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. But as far as the talent that they've got on the offensive side of the ball, I think that, we saw what Kirk did in the first 8 games, and Kirk looked pretty daggone good. I think that he's stepping into a great spot because we're not that 0-13 type team that's drafting somebody. This is a pretty good football team. I don't think we're great. I don't like our defense still, but I think offensively, JJ could look pretty good behind that offensive line.
But Pete, who else has that entire setup in front of them, and who per reports from the people that are at camp every day has looked pretty dang good himself? Sam Darnold. who is the projected starter and has never had this in front of him. You could throw out his time with the New York Jets. What on earth did he have going on there? He was one of those guys that was thrown into the situation, right? He was thrown in day one, expected to be something without any tools around him, and he wasn't able to do that. He had an okay year last year out in San Francisco when he had some of those tools, and he's according to the reports of those guys that are there every day, he's looked pretty good. He's looked not bad. I'm pretty high on Darnold, at least to start the season.
Yes.
I agree with you, Dave. I think ideally you don't see – I mean, rookie quarterbacks, it is – if you screw
it's
them
so
up,
hard.
It's over. If you screw them up, it's over.
Look.
They might hit, but if they don't, it's done. They're not coming back from that.
They're done.
So
you're 100% right.
I think you have to give it a little bit of time.
Listen, Brett Favre, one of the greatest NFL quarterbacks and gunslingers of all time, flopped out before he made it. You know, I mean, like it was, and that's a rarity when you flop out. Here's the thing. If you're not seeing J.J. McCarthy this year, it's because Sam Darnold is playing well enough to hold. He is a placeholder. Everybody knows this.
He knows it. Yeah.
Sam Darnold knows this is a deal for him to play well, and then maybe I move on to another team and become a starter. And I know that we're hearing the right things. You know, Kevin O'Connell saying he's going to learn, and we're going to, you know, and JJ saying I'm just going to learn every day, and that's great. Okay, don't believe any of that. If you're listening to the show right now, do not believe that. That is PR speak for we're not putting any pressure on this guy. We're not putting anything on his shoulders. He just needs to learn and both learn what it's like, you know, to learn the offense, but also learn what it's like to be a pro. And don't discount this in my mind. Sam Darnold knows exactly what it's like to be J.J. McCarthy.
Yep.
To come into a situation where he's a top pick quarterback and expected to be the face of a franchise for years to come. Sam Darnold knows exactly what that's like. And hopefully he can teach him about that. J.J. McCarthy, I've read the articles. Alec Lewis wrote a great article about him in The Athletic. If you haven't seen it, read it. It goes back to talking about how his parents really, you know, they weren't those doting parents that had his trophies and everything up. It's just basically his dad's a working class guy and says, you know what? You want the promotion? Go earn the promotion. I like his mindset. I like how he's come up. And I think truly believe that J.J. McCarthy will be a good quarterback eventually. But to your point, Charlie, and I agree with this, you can do a lot more damage than good starting him too early. And there have been plenty of quarterbacks who have started too early and flamed out and may have been better waiting a little bit longer. You cannot, to me, hurt a quarterback by waiting longer. You can hurt a quarterback by starting him too soon.
That's probably true. The one thing I still hang my hat on, though, guys, and Charlie, you're right. You look at the Jets. Well, why did the Jets draft him where they did? I think he was number 3 in the draft.
Yes.
First of all, starting with this, USC. Name me a good quarterback out of USC, and I'll do whatever you want. There's none. I'm telling you, Carson Palmer is the only one people can come up with, and it was a much different team. With
Matt Leinart. Oh, wait.
It wasn't. No. Yeah. There's a long list of guys who went in the top 5.
Yeah, you're right.
You know why that is? Because USC had great running backs, great offensive linemen, unbelievable defensive play, and they would win the Pac-10 every year, and they'd just say, whoever the quarterback is, he's going to be a first-round pick. He's going to go somewhere high in the draft. That was Sam Darnold. He had all the talent around him in the world. But when I look at this kid, and I like Sam, I got nothing against the guy at all, but I just look at some of his numbers and I'm like, okay, the Jets were terrible. I get it. He didn't show any progress at all. As a matter of fact, in his third year, he threw more interceptions than he did touchdowns. So we can say, well, but the Jets stink. Yeah, they do stink. But the reality is he didn't do anything to make them any better. Then he goes down to Carolina. Then he goes to Carolina. He did okay at San Francisco, but he barely played, guys. So that doesn't even count. We have to throw that one out. So I don't even know what we've got with Sam Darnold. Is he a great quarterback? No. Could he be a backup or a mentor of some sort, I think, for JJ? Absolutely. And when you look at JJ, the other JJ, Jets, and you've got him and you've got Addison, and you've got Naylor, we've got a receiving group, guys, that is phenomenal. And if he can get him the ball, and you've seen the clips, how many times have we seen the clips where it's like, oh, today he threw 6 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, whatever it might be to each one of those two quarterbacks? I think he's ready.
I don't think you push it. And that's such a risk, though. I mean, Pete, are you willing
why
to risk
it? Why is it a risk, though, guys? Why is this a risk? It's not like he's going to a team who's got an offensive line who's giving up 70 sacks. And there are teams out there, the Giants. They gave up 85 sacks. Mm-hmm. They've got quarterback. The Washington Redskins, the Washington Commanders, the 65 sacks. Why did these guys take quarterbacks? You look at New England, had 48 sacks. This isn't a team. The Vikings shouldn't be a team. If our offensive line is as good as we all think it is, we're not going to give up 50 sacks. We're just not going to do that. So he's not going to get back there. What's going to hurt him? I don't understand.
I think a lot of it's the mental.
Crushed every single play. And he turns into, and this is an extreme, but I'll say it, Christian Ponder, who was also a first round pick.
Granted, he was not any good either.
We were not excited. But he got happy feet because he got crushed every time he was in the pocket.
Hey, look, he came from Florida State, and he should never have been a first round pick.
No,
that was how bad the Vikings were back then at analyzing who was good, who was not, who's a first rounder. So,
I mean, but a quarterback is such a cerebral position. When you're mentally out of it, you're done. I think that's what's happened more often than not with these guys is not that, okay, yeah, they don't have the tools around them, they haven't progressed, all of these things, but they mentally, it's just over for them after they get crushed every week, week in and week out. Not a lot of guys come back from that.
You know, it's funny how pampered these quarterbacks are. I mean, you know, if you're a linebacker, you get in there and you play, right? I mean,
because there's so much money in them.
There is. Although at this level, this is where you get the money out of them, right? I mean, because they have the rookie contract stuff. That's when you want to see. What do we have? I'm telling you guys, when you stand at practice there, he looks like a veteran quarterback. He does not look like a guy who's confused. He does not look like a guy who's coming up to the coach and kind of trying to figure it out. He's going over and slapping a guy on the butt going, hey, great job. We're kicking butt today. I mean,
But Pete, he also doesn't look like a guy who's going up against the number one defense trying to rip his head off. That's my only argument to that.
But aren't we supposed to have a good offense? I'm sort of more on the fence on this, but everybody tells me how great our offensive line is, right? I mean, we've got a great tackle in O'Neal. We've got Darrisaw. Darrisaw is one of the best tackles in all of football. Well, if we believe that, they'll give him the time to throw the football again. And by the way, time to throw the football to three great receivers. How about that?
Yes. I mean, and a tight end. You're 100% right on that. Mm-hmm. I just, you know what? What does our audience think? 651-461-9226. It is the stylesfinancial.com talk and text line. Are you with Pete? Is JJ McCarthy ready week one and going into the Hall of Fame in week two? No, I'm kidding. Is he ready week one? Or are you on mine and Charlie's side where we don't want to see him for as long as possible? We'd love to hear what you say. Hit us up, stylesfinancial.com, talking text line 651-461-9226. We'll talk about another quarterback, one who I might even be more excited about this year than JJ McCarthy. It's Max Brosmer. We're going to talk about him and the Gopher football team coming up next on The Huddle.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Pete, you're the football guy. People are calling for my head, but I'm sticking with my call.
Well, they're not right. I'm not saying I'm 100% right, but you and I look at it from a different lens, I think, in this case, or whatever, and Charlie as well.
Yeah, that's okay.
Which is fine.
You know what?
Yeah.
You've forgotten more about football than I will ever know, and I have no problem admitting that.
And hey, you know,
and that's why we.
The notion that I'm not a football guy, I played until middle school.
There you go.
I know my football.
I love you, man.
Hey, listen. Yeah. I watched so much football in high school from the bench. I mean,
you made it to the bench.
Yeah,
I didn't make it.
We didn't have enough kids at my school to cut people.
I'll tell you guys a Golden Gopher who in this era of football would have made a great quarterback in the NFL, Ricky Foggy. He didn't get an opportunity because the NFL wasn't that NFL at that time. But I'll tell you what, he did it for 10 years in arena ball. He did it for 10 years up in the CFL. I'm throwing a shout out to him because he's one of my best friends in the world. I love him to death. I mean, he came to Minnesota and changed the culture along with Lou Holtz. And I'll tell you, we all owe
Ricky's
him
a good guy.
For that. He's a great guy. Yeah.
I love Ricky.
Yep.
I'll tell you what, man. I am so excited about, and I know I get excited about Gopher football quarterbacks every year, just like I did Ethan Kelly McManus. I am really excited about Max Brosmer. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything you're seeing and hearing, and I watched a little bit of the video from yesterday's open practice, Pete. Mm-hmm. I will tell you the first thing, and I'm sure, you've seen him in person,
yes.
Have you, or at least watched the videos
yep.
of him?
Yep.
I will tell you the one thing, and I'm curious if you felt the same way. The one thing that I took away from him is this kid is so confident in the every throw, every decision. I mean, he steps right in, he sits in the pocket, and he makes a dime of a throw. Charlie, you sent us a call on that, a tweet on that this morning where even a guy from Iowa says, holy cow, this guy's going to be really good. Mm-hmm. I really like him, Pete. I just I love the way his approach already is to quarterback in this offense.
Well, what he's done with the other players and the travel down to Georgia and all those kind of things, it shows you he's all in. I mean, he really is. And I think confidence is exactly the right word. He's not cocky, but he's a leader. He's a guy that I knew nothing about. You know, if you wind back the clock a little bit, I knew nothing about him in his former spot. But I think what I saw at practice and what they're talking about, I think he really could give us a different sort of a look than we had last year.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, last year we were still in the PJ offense, right? And I love PJ, and I love the idea of running the football, but we were trying to do that and passing in the most obvious pass situations that you could come up with, right? So we were just a different team. I love the quote that I saw from PJ from yesterday. He said, "We can throw the ball to run the ball." I love that PJ Fleck said that because
yes,
he's the guy
finally.
Who runs the ball to throw the ball.
Yep.
But
yes.
I'll tell you what, guys, we've got Darius Taylor. We all know that he's one heck of a running back. I've heard nothing but great things about Marcus Major from Oklahoma mm-hmm. who transferred, that he's looked phenomenal as well. I talked to some of the coaches over there. They're great guys. You know, obviously they never want to tell you too much, but we were a pretty average to terrible team last year, and I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that we always threw in the obvious situations. And I think Kelly McManus had an arm talent, but he just never got the confidence. And yeah. I think it's because he had so much pressure because we're always going to throw on 3rd and 8. What else are you going to do, right? But on 1st and 10, you're going to hand the ball off. And so we're not going to be as predictable if PJ is a man of his word about what he said about throwing the ball.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, guys, that offensive line is monstrous. We've got great tight ends like we always do. I think if we do things right as far as play calling, I think the Golden Gophers will look good, and Max Brosmer is going to look great.
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head with it's going to be a different look. He really kind of does come off as the polar opposite of Kelly McManus from last year, who had, you know, and still does have, he's going to be starting at Rutgers this year. He'll be playing the Gophers. He's got a cannon of an arm. Absolutely as much arm talent as you could ask for in a college or even professional quarterback. But that decision-making maybe just wasn't quite there, at least yet, last yeah. year for Kelly McManus. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be there for him with us going forward. Brosmer seems to be the opposite. Maybe he doesn't have the arm talent that some of these guys have. That's not to say he can't throw the ball well, but maybe not, you know, that elite, elite arm talent. But he knows where to put the ball. And that's where PJ's had success, right? 2019 with Tanner Morgan, where you just ran slants to Rashad Bateman and Tyler Johnson, play after play. You just get those easy cutting routes from your talented playmakers, get the balls in their hands, and look at the score, and all of a sudden you're beating Penn State at home for the first time in however long. So this really kind of is the bread and butter of PJ's quarterbacking, you know, play style. So it's exciting. I'm looking forward to it. I'm very high on Brosmer as well. We'll see. Can't wait for the season. The downside, of course, is the schedule is crazy. Absolutely
it's
crazy.
It's a tough schedule. And what happens when – here's to me, to both of your points, honestly. We all know the offense has to change, right? I mean, running to passing to run is a different offense than we've seen. My question is, what happens when you're down a touchdown, when you're down two touchdowns? And are we going to go back to, we got to get that run game established again? Or are they going to let Brosmer, for lack of a better term, cook? I mean, are they going to say, hey, man, you know, let drive us down the field. Do your thing. And I think that's what's going to elevate him above every other quarterback we've seen in the past 5 to 10 years. Is can this, when the game is on the line, and I think that's truly what's been lacking in the quarterback position. When the game is on the line, can you be the guy? And Tanner Morgan had flashes of it, but can you be that guy that puts everybody on your shoulders and wins a game? And that's what I feel like Brosmer could hope for. Well, I guess I shouldn't feel like, because I haven't seen him play yet. That's what I hope he will be able to do, because I really do believe that's what this offense has been missing for so long.
And if they, I'll tell you this, guys, if they ever listen, because I bring this up every time I see PJ or any of the guys on the offensive coaching staff, I go, look, throw the ball to the daggone tight end, please.
Yes.
Just throw him the ball. Look at what Jim Harbaugh has done his entire career, and he lines up these big tight ends. We line them up. We throw the ball to the receivers only, but we've got all these tight ends. Use those tight ends. They're open. And if we do that, we're going to be an 8-4 football team. I'm throwing it out there right now.
Yeah, well, I mean, Brosmer's top receiving target last year was his running back, who ended up, I believe, getting drafted, if I'm not mistaken. But his number one targets most of the time, it was the running back position. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. He doesn't always just have to use receivers. He has a history of being able to spread the ball around.
I'm excited. August 29th, first game of the season for them. So it's coming up here within a few weeks. I think they've only had 1 or 2 weeks of 1 week of practice so far, if I'm correct, 1 or 2. I'm excited to see where the football season is here. It's here. Season is here, which is great. I'm excited for it. We'll step aside, take a quick break, come back and do the fast break. You're listening to The Huddle.
Let's hit this segment running and gunning. Time for a fast back and forth with Pete and Dave. We're calling Fast Break on The Huddle.
All right, guys. Let's go through this once more. Fast break time at 12:30 on a Sunday morning. Dave, we're starting with you.
12:30?
10:30. Did I say 12:30? 10:30.
What time zone are you in?
I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to the Twins game after this, actually. I'm trying to pass the time. I'm looking forward to it. So I'm trying to get out of here.
He said, let's get through this.
Yeah, let's get through this. I'm going to go to the game. I'm going to have a brat. Let's finish this up. Good, this is a fast break, right? It's got to be fast.
Peanuts.
Yeah, I'm bringing peanuts for sure. Dave, I was perusing baseball highlights the other night. Came across a video of Ben Joyce. Do you have any idea who Ben Joyce is?
Oh, gosh. Why does that name sound familiar?
Ben Joyce of the Angels. He's a relief pitcher.
Okay.
104.7 to strike out J.D. Martinez to end the game last night.
Wow.
Hardest pitch of the season so far in Major League Baseball. And it got me thinking about hardest pitches in baseball, fastballs in general. The hardest pitch of all time, as you may know, Aroldis Chapman, 105.8. That was back in 2010, yeah. 14 years ago, the hardest pitch of all time was thrown. Nobody's been able to top it since then. So a two-part question for you, Dave. How high do you think we're going to get? Have we hit that figurative ceiling of hardest pitch? Is 105, 105.8, 106, is that kind of where it's going to be, or is somebody going to blow us out of the water as we go forward? And second off, we see all of these power fastball pitchers now, and is there going to be a kind of coming back to the median at any point? Are we going to go back to finesse pitching at any point? Is somebody going to figure it out and try and kind of take that away?
That's a good question. First of all, the fact that Aroldis Chapman is still even pitching, too, that throwing like he does, amazes me. I would have told you, if you had bet me when he threw that fast pitch, and how long ago did you say?
14 years ago, 2010.
Wow. 14 years ago? If you'd have told me that 14 years from now his arm's still going to be intact and he'd be pitching, I would have told you you're crazy. Yes, it'll be broken. I mean, they always are. We'll get to a point. I don't know. I mean, I'm not a doctor. What's humanly possible before your arm explodes? But I just, I remember, for example, you know, I remember when this is way, way back, I'm dating myself, but when Al Iafredi, who used to play for the Washington Capitals, he had that hard, hard slap shot. You know, this was the hardest one. It was in the 90s. Nobody else was going to do it. Now you got guys, you know, hitting the high 100s, ones and change on the radar. So now technology changed. They went from wood sticks to aluminum to graphite to all that. And I mean, that's going to be what it's about. Is technology going to change? Is training going to change? I don't think we'll see 130 mile an hour fastball at any point. I think probably 110. I feel like 110 is going to be where we top out at. But we'll see it. And what was the second part of the question?
Are we ever going to go back to some finesse pitching, or is it just from now on?
Yeah, I think we will. We always regress back to the mean in every sport. You know, I mean, there's the side. I always go back to, you know, you could go back to football too. Linebackers, we had linebackers that were small, and then they became massive, and then we realized those massive guys weren't as good on the pass rush or getting out to the flats to cover a receiver. So now you go back to the smaller, quicker, more, you know, compact linebackers. And same thing with hockey. The players were big, then they were small, then they were big, and now you got guys back into the 5'10", 6 foot range again. So I do believe that we always regress back, and I'm sure that there will be a pitcher who will figure out maybe it's a new pitch. Who knows what's coming up? But I do think eventually it'll regress back because you've seen it all already. So they got to do something different.
Yeah, absolutely. Pete, we'll continue on here over to you, and we'll stick with baseball for the moment and make note that the Twins are finishing off their season series today with the White Sox this afternoon. Like I said, I'll be there. Come say hi if you see me. The White Sox are bad, Pete. I don't know if you know this. The yes. Twins are looking to go 11-1 in the season series against them. They've lost one game. And, oh, by the way, that game that they lost to the White Sox, that was on July 10th. That was the last time the White Sox won a game.
Oh,
White Sox have not won a game since July 10th. It's going to be 20 straight if the Twins can pull it out today. It has been 19 straight already. It got me thinking of just horrible seasons for Minnesota sports teams. The Twins have had some down years. Vikings are always kind of middle. They rarely have the really down years, but they occasionally will. Wolves, many, many down years. But, Pete, if you had to circle one season that you can remember, or it could be, you know, a little bit of a range of time from a Minnesota sports team where it was just absolutely in the doldrums, just horrible seasons for those teams, worst all time in Minnesota sports, what do you think?
Oh, I actually have a really easy answer for that one. I was a part, I was a part of it, unfortunately. 1983 Golden Gophers. Oh my goodness, we were terrible. I mean, we couldn't have been a worse football team. Now you might have been looking for pros, but I'm just telling you.
No, that's good.
That was the year I think we were 1-10 or something like that. We beat Rice. We thought we were on top of the world, and we come back and we lose to Nebraska a couple weeks later, 84-13. I'll never forget that number because it was 21 points a quarter, and I remember watching Irving Fryer on the outside. Nobody was lined up against him. I remember looking in the quarterback's eyes, Turner Gill, and he's looking at me, and he looks to his left, and he sees this guy, and nobody's covering him. and we just couldn't do anything right that year. We were terrible. We were beat up. We had more guys injured than you could ever imagine. You couldn't count that high. And it was just one of the awful seasons of all time for Gopher football. But that also ushered in Coach Holtz, who then 2 years later had us going to a bowl game. So that's why I think the world of Coach. He came in, he did an amazing job because we were really bad.
Yeah, no, that's a perfect answer. Dave, you got anything?
2011 Minnesota Twins, 63-99.
Yuck.
That was such a bad season.
They didn't even lose 100. What do you mean?
But I mean, Carl Pavano was your number one starter. That was the beginning and possibly the end of the Nishioka experiment. Mm-hmm. I mean, oof, that was a bad season.
Yeah, getting rid of J.J. Hardy for Tsuyoshi Nishioka is not looked back upon fondly as a good move by the Terry Ryan administration, I can imagine. Those guys,
it was Bill Smith. Bill Smith was fired after that year.
Yeah, that's not great. Yeah, there were a couple of those years. I thought you were going to go with the Twins one in that era. I'd have to look it up to see what was the worst of that era. But
I remember that season, sense. And I remember feeling bad for the beat writers because, you know, like they're out. They were out of it by like end of June, beginning of July, and you're like, oh gosh, I got 87 more games to go and try to find stuff to write about. Anyway,
yeah, not as fun. Dave, we'll move on to question number three for you. A team gold, a pair of bronzes in the all-around and uneven bars for Suni Lee at the Olympics. I believe she has one more event left to go, but mm-hmm. already three more medals this year, of course, to go along with 4 years ago, not quite 4 years ago, but last Olympics, when she did win the all-around gold, as well as I believe she also won some other medals. I'd have to look that up.
She did, yep.
Yeah, she won more medals at that Olympics as well, up to so at least four, five, maybe six medals for Suni Lee. I think that makes her the greatest Minnesota Olympian of all time at this point, right? At 21 years old, I don't think anybody can really compete with that level of Olympic success over two consecutive games, mind you. First off, do you disagree with that?
Well, it depends on what you consider Lindsey Vonn, because Lindsey Vonn was born in Minnesota, but then she went to Colorado, and so she kind of considers – I think both of her homes. I think you could make an argument for Lindsey Vonn.
What's interesting is I looked that up because I was under the same impression. She only won three medals. She won
really?
Yeah, she only won three Olympic medals.
Huh. Well, there's more chances to win medals in gymnastics.
Yeah.
Is there? I mean, there's a lot of different competitions in skiing. You know, the Super G, the downhill, the slalom. There's a lot of different events that you can do that you can specialize in, just like you can with gymnastics. So I don't know. I feel like Suni Lee has the obvious argument going for her. Sure, you can make some arguments, but she seems to have it. Is she already on the Mount Rushmore of Minnesota athletes?
Oh boy.
He's throwing these out there at you, Dave.
I mean, the greatest Minnesota Olympian, of course. I mean, won the biggest event at the Olympics for many people, the all-around gold.
She did, but and this is not to take away anything. First of all, I'll say this. What she did these Olympics after what she's been through in the last few years, I mean, she was told she was never going to compete again because she had a kidney disease.
Yeah, two kidney diseases.
She came back from that, and it's incredible. The all-around that she won was without Simone Biles in the field. And so that's the caveat there if we're really going to talk about it. Now, is that fair? Could she have won it anyway? Maybe. Who knows? I mean, they're right with each other. And Simone Biles is the greatest gymnast, I think, at this point, of U.S. gymnast of all time. So, you know, if we're going to call Olympics or Olympics a sport, I guess, if we're judging just Olympics, maybe. You know, Lindsey Vonn also had dominance in other international competitions, too, even though she just – she did only had three Olympic medals, as you said. She dominated everywhere she went for a very long time. I think you could I guess I'd have to say, yeah, I guess you could put her up there on that. I just it's a small sample size. It's only two games. It's only two Olympic games. And one of those, that asterisk is still there, not to take away anything from what she's done. And she's had a great Olympic Games this time around as well.
Well, that's about all you get. You only get about two Olympic Games as a gymnast. I mean, that's your peak.
Unless you're Simone Biles.
And you said greatest American gymnast of all time. No, Dave, she is the greatest gymnast of all time. You can leave it at that. No caveats. She's the greatest gymnast of all time. Any
Nadia
country.
Comaneci might want to have a word with you.
I don't believe she does. I think Simone Biles.
That name does always come up, though, right? I mean, it almost has to.
She was 16.
Yeah, she was 16. Phenomenal. She's getting tens, you know, and everything. And it was before tens were something anybody ever got, right? There was something special about that whole thing with her.
Sure, she was phenomenal.
Yeah,
Simone Biles is the greatest.
She is incredible. Yeah. We were watching the Olympics. We've watched a ton of it. I've watched a ton of gymnastics. I actually love the really obscure stuff too, but. If you ever watch Simone Biles do the vault or any of these athletes, the speed that they get coming down that ramp, and then they launch themselves into 17 flips and they stop on a dime. I mean, like, in terms of physics, I don't know how that works. It's incredible.
Yeah,
it is incredible. So much
fun. 12, 13 feet in the air is what they always say for someone off of that vault. It's pretty incredible.
Hey, I got one last thing for you guys because I know we gotta go. How about this? Did you guys see the young lady who in the triple jump who got the first medal ever for the Dominican Republic?
I didn't.
No.
Thea LaFond is her name. And okay. So she gets the first medal ever for that country. Her brother is a defensive end for the Naval Academy.
Yeah.
It's awesome. And by the way,
good story.
She went out 49.2 feet. I was a pretty damn good triple jumper. I was, I went to state in that, whatever. But it was like 44. I mean, it's an unbelievable level of which this young lady hit.
Sprinters
absolutely
are
incredible.
Yeah, there's a fun video you can find of them telling her brother at practice, who maybe, they should have let him watch it live. I don't know. Maybe right? That's just me.
His head coach wanted to do that, man. That was cool.
I know. Pete, I got one last question.
Go ahead.
Yeah, we'll finish this up real quick. We already hit on Max Brosmer and have hit on quarterbacks for both the Vikings and Gophers. But as we've said, a lot more to football than just quarterbacking, particularly with the Gophers this year. Some of their star players like Darius Taylor are going to be back behind the quarterback running the ball. So my question, Pete, give me, as you've been at practices,
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Allo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Allo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Huddle.
Let's hit this segment running and gunning. Time for a fast back and forth with Pete and Dave. We're calling Fast Break on the Huddle.
All right, guys. Let's get through this once more. Fast break time at 12:30 on a Sunday morning. Dave, we're starting with you.
12:30?
10:30. Did I say 12:30? 10:30.
What time zone are you in?
I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to the Twins game after this, actually. I'm trying to pass the time. I'm looking forward to it. So I'm trying to get out of here.
He said, let's get through this.
Yeah, let's get through this. I'm going to go to the game. I'm going to have a brat. Let's finish this up. Good, this is a fast break, right? It's got to be
some
fast.
Peanuts.
Yeah, I'm bringing peanuts for sure. Dave, I was perusing baseball highlights the other night. Came across a video of Ben Joyce. Do you have any idea who Ben Joyce is?
Oh, gosh. Why does that name sound familiar?
Ben Joyce of the Angels. He's a relief pitcher.
Okay.
104.7 to strike out J.D. Martinez to end the game last night.
Wow.
Hardest pitch of the season so far in Major League Baseball. And it got me thinking about hardest pitches in baseball, fastballs in general. The hardest pitch of all time, as you may know, Aroldis Chapman, 105.8. That was back in 2010, 14 years ago, the hardest pitch of all time was thrown. Nobody's been able to top it since then. So a two-part question for you, Dave. How high do you think we're going to get? Have we hit that figurative ceiling of hardest pitch? Is 105, 105.8, 106, is that kind of where it's going to be, or is somebody going to blow us out of the water as we go forward? And second off, we see all of these power fastball pitchers now, and is there going to be a kind of coming back to the median at any point? Are we going to go back to finesse pitching at any point? Is somebody going to figure it out and try and kind of take that away?
That's a good question. First of all, the fact that Aroldis Chapman is still even pitching, too, that throwing like he does, amazes me. I would have told you, if you had bet me when he threw that fast pitch, and how long ago did you say?
14 years ago, 2010.
Wow. 14 years ago? If you'd have told me that 14 years from now his arm's still going to be intact and he'd be pitching, I would have told you you're crazy. Yes, it'll be broken. I mean, they always are. We'll get to a point. I don't know. I mean, I'm not a doctor. What's humanly possible before your arm explodes? But I remember, for example, I remember when this is way, way back, I'm dating myself, but when Al Iafredi, who used to play for the Washington Capitals, he had that hard, hard slap shot. This was the hardest one. It was in the 90s. Nobody else was going to do it. Now you got guys you know, hitting the high 100s, ones and change on the radar. So now technology changed. They went from wood sticks to aluminum to graphite to all that. And I mean, that's going to be what it's about. Is technology going to change? Is training going to change? I don't think we'll see 130 mile an hour fastball at any point. I think probably 110. I feel like 110 is going to be where we top out at. But we'll see it. And what was the second part of the question?
Are we ever going to go back to some finesse pitching, or is it just from now on?
Yeah, I think we will. We always regress back to the mean in every sport. You know, I mean, there's the side. I always go back to, you know, you could go back to football too. Linebackers, we had linebackers that were small, and then they became massive, and then we realized those massive guys weren't as good on the pass rush or getting out to the flats to cover a receiver. So now you go back to the smaller, quicker, more, you know, compact linebackers. And same thing with hockey. The players were big, then they were small, then they were big, and now you got guys back into the 5'10", 6-foot range again. So I do believe that we always regress back, and I'm sure that there will be a pitcher who will figure out maybe it's a new pitch. Who knows what's coming up? But I do think eventually it'll regress back because you've seen it all already. So they got to do something different.
Yeah, absolutely. Pete, we'll continue on here over to you, and we'll stick with baseball for the moment and make note that the Twins are finishing off their season series today with the White Sox this afternoon. Like I said, I'll be there. Come say hi if you see me. The White Sox are bad, Pete. I don't know if you know this. The Twins are looking to go 11-1 in the season series against them. They've lost one game. And, oh, by the way, that game that they lost to the White Sox, that was on July 10th. That was the last time the White Sox won a game.
Oh,
White Sox have not won a game since July 10th. It's going to be 20 straight if the Twins can pull it out today. It has been 19 straight already. It got me thinking of just horrible seasons for Minnesota sports teams. The Twins have had some down years. Vikings are always kind of middle. They rarely have the really down years, but they occasionally will. Wolves, many, many down years. But, Pete, if you had to circle one season that you can remember, or it could be, you know, a little bit of a range of time from a Minnesota sports team where it was just absolutely in the doldrums, just horrible seasons for those teams, worst all time in Minnesota sports. What do you think?
Oh, I actually have a really easy answer for that one. I was a part of it, unfortunately. 1983 Golden Gophers. Oh my goodness, we were terrible. I mean, we couldn't have been a worse football team. Now you might have been looking for pros, but I'm just telling you.
No, that's good.
That was the year I think we were 1-10 or something like that. We beat Rice. We thought we were on top of the world, and we come back and we lose to Nebraska a couple of weeks later, 84-13. I'll never forget that number because it was 21 points a quarter, and I remember watching Irving Fryer on the outside. Nobody was lined up against him. I remember looking in the quarterback's eyes, Turner Gill, and he's looking at me, and he looks to his left, and he sees this guy, and nobody's covering him. and we just couldn't do anything right that year. We were terrible. We were beat up. We had more guys injured than you could ever imagine. You couldn't count that high. And it was just one of the awful seasons of all time for Gopher football. But that also ushered in Coach Holtz, who then 2 years later had us going to a bowl game. So that's why I think the world of Coach. He came in, he did an amazing job because we were really bad.
Yeah, no, that's a perfect answer. Dave, you got anything?
2011 Minnesota Twins, 63-99.
Yuck.
That was such a bad season.
They didn't even lose 100. What do you mean?
But I mean, Carl Pavano was your number one starter. That was the beginning and possibly the end of the Nishioka experiment. Mm-hmm. I mean, oof, that was a bad season.
Yeah, getting rid of J.J. Hardy for Tsuyoshi Nishioka is not looked back upon fondly as a good move by the Terry Ryan administration, I can imagine. Those guys,
it was Bill Smith. Bill Smith was fired after that year.
Yeah, that's not great. Yeah, there were a couple of those years. I thought you were going to go with the Twins one in that era. I'd have to look it up to see what was the worst of that era. But
I remember that season, and I remember feeling bad for the beat writers because, you know, like they're out. They were out of it by like end of June, beginning of July. And you're like, oh, gosh, I got 87 more games to go and try to find stuff to write about. Anyway.
Yeah, not as fun. Dave, we'll move on to question number three for you. A team gold, a pair of bronzes in the all around and uneven bars. for Suni Lee at the Olympics. I believe she has one more event left to go, but mm-hmm. already three more medals this year, of course, to go along with 4 years ago, not quite 4 years ago, but last Olympics, when she did win the all-around gold, as well as, I believe she also won some other medals. I'd have to look that up.
She did, yep.
Yeah, she won more medals at that Olympics as well, up to, so at least four, five, maybe six medals for Suni Lee. I think that makes her the greatest Minnesota Olympian of all time at this point, right? At 21 years old, I don't think anybody can really compete with that level of Olympic success over two consecutive games, mind you. First off, do you disagree with that?
Well, it depends on what you consider Lindsey Vonn, because Lindsey Vonn was born in Minnesota, but then she went to Colorado, and so she kind of considers – I think both of her homes. I think you could make an argument for Lindsey Vonn.
What's interesting is I looked that up because I was under the same impression. She only won three medals. She won
really?
Yeah, she only won three Olympic medals.
Huh. Well, there's more chances to win medals in gymnastics.
Yeah.
Is there? I mean, there's a lot of different competitions in skiing. You know, the Super G, the downhill, the slalom. There's a lot of different events that you can do that you can specialize in, just like you can with gymnastics. So I don't know. I feel like Suni Lee has the obvious argument going for her. Sure, you can make some arguments, but she seems to have it. Is she already on the Mount Rushmore of Minnesota athletes?
Oh, boy.
He's throwing these out there at you, Dave.
I mean, the greatest Minnesota Olympian, of course. Yep. I mean, won the biggest event at the Olympics for many people, the all-around gold.
She did, but, and this is not to take away anything. First of all, I'll say this. What she did these Olympics after what she's been through in the last few years, I mean, she was told she was never going to compete again because she had a kidney disease.
Yeah, two kidney diseases.
She came back from that, and it's incredible. The all-around that she won was without Simone Biles in the field. And so that's the caveat there if we're really going to talk about it. Now, is that fair? Could she have won it anyway? Maybe. Who knows? I mean, they're right with each other. And Simone Biles is the greatest gymnast, I think, at this point, of U.S. gymnast of all time. So, you know, if we're going to call Olympics or Olympics a sport, I guess, if we're judging just Olympics, maybe. You know, Lindsey Vonn also had dominance in other international competitions, too, even though she just – she did only had three Olympic medals, as you said. She dominated everywhere she went for a very long time. I think you could I guess I'd have to say, yeah, I guess you could put her up there on that. I just it's a small sample size. It's only two games. It's only two Olympic games. And one of those, that asterisk is still there, not to take away anything from what she's done. And she's had a great Olympic Games this time around as well.
Well, that's about all you get. You only get about two Olympic Games as a gymnast. I mean, that's your peak.
Unless you're Simone Biles.
And you said greatest American gymnast of all time. No, Dave, she is the greatest gymnast of all time. You can leave it at that. No caveats. She is the greatest gymnast of all time. Any
Nadia
country.
Comaneci might want to have a word with her.
I don't believe she does. I think Simone Biles.
That name does always come up, though, right? I mean, it almost has to.
She was 16.
She was 16. She's getting tens, you know, and everything. And it was before tens were something anybody ever got, right? There was something special about that whole thing with her.
Sure, she was phenomenal.
Yeah,
Simone Biles is the greatest.
She is incredible. Yeah. We were watching the Olympics. We've watched a ton of it. I've watched a ton of gymnastics. I actually love the really obscure stuff too, but. If you ever watch Simone Biles do the vault or any of these athletes, the speed that they get coming down that ramp, and then they launch themselves into 17 flips and they stop on a dime. I mean, like, in terms of physics, I don't know how that works. It's incredible.
Yeah,
it is incredible.
So much fun. 12, 13 feet in the air is what they always say for someone off of that vault. It's pretty incredible.
Hey, I got one last thing for you guys because I know we gotta go. How about this? Did you guys see the young lady who in the triple jump who got the first medal ever for Dominican Republic?
I didn't.
No.
Thea LaFond is her name. And so she gets the first medal ever for that country. Her brother is a defensive end for the Naval Academy.
Yeah.
It's awesome. And by the way,
good story.
She went out 49.2 feet. I was a pretty damn good triple jumper. I went to state and that whatever. But it was like 44. I mean, she's an unbelievable level of which this young lady hit. I mean, absolutely incredible.
Yeah, there's a fun video you can find of them telling her brother at practice, who maybe, you know, they should have let him watch it live. I don't know. Maybe that's just me.
His head coach wanted to do that, man. That was cool. He did.
Pete, I got one last question for you.
Go ahead.
Yeah, we'll finish this up real quick. We already hit on Max Brosmer and have hit on quarterbacks for both the Vikings and Gophers. But as we've said, a lot more to football than just quarterbacking, particularly with the Gophers this year. Some of their star players like Darius Taylor are going to be back behind the quarterback running the ball. So my question, Pete, give me, as you've been at practices, you know these things, give me an under-the-radar guy that's gonna impress this year, that's going to have a good year. Don't give me Brosmer. Don't give me, you know, the household names. Give me somebody that maybe not everybody's heard of.
Yeah, no, that's
basically, don't do what I would do. You do it.
No, that's fair. You know, the one thing that did stand out, and I brought his name up, but he's done very little in his career, but that kid, Marcus Major, we're all talking about Darius Taylor. He's great. And I think we've got a couple of receivers. Somebody's going to pop up out of this, but I think Marcus Major is a kid who all of a sudden he might just hit the ground literally running and shock everybody at what he could do, because I think he had that sort of talent level. I mean, let's be honest. He was at the University of Oklahoma as a running back. That's what they're known for. So I think he could be something really, really fun to keep an eye on for the Gophers.
Yeah, great answer. I'm going to throw out Anthony Smith on the defensive line. I think the defensive line might surprise some people this year.
Our D-line is good. We have some great. That I'll tell you what, we have an outside rusher who is big, strong, fast. He's out of Connecticut. He's done a great job, and I think should have a blow up year. I think he's going to be special.
Ja Joyner.
Yeah.
All right, guys. That's all.
I will not try to outdo Pete with obscure football Gopher guys. You win. Let's take a break, come back, we'll wrap up hour number one. By the way, hour number two, before we get out here, David Plummer, 2016 Olympic swimmer, is going to join us in the second hour to chat about the Olympics, 11:35. So we'll wrap up hour number one coming up next. Did you watch the 100-meter, I think it was the women's 100-meter final? Yesterday, the woman from St. Lucia, whose name escapes me, she was the first ever St. Lucia athlete to win gold. And I know you love track and field, Pete, and I mean, I'm in it too. And I had the distinct, one of the thrills of my lifetime was watching Usain Bolt run his last race, which is the last Olympic race. These athletes are so incredible. And when you watch them in real time, when they do that side camera, I mean, you just don't realize how amazingly fast and just they're athletes of this caliber. They just look like they've been put together solely for this purpose by a higher power, whatever you believe. It is amazing to me. I love it.
It's staggering. And in every different sport, the different physical things that people are doing is incredible. The one guy we didn't mention is the guy who is three gold medals in a row. No one's ever done that before in the shot put. Out of Portland, Oregon.
Oh, Eric Krauser.
Oh, he's
Ryan Krauser. Yeah.
And how about him setting record after record after record? He is a mammoth guy. Unreal.
Unfortunately, the Minnesotan came in fourth. Peyton Otterdahl out of Roseville.
I know Peyton Otterdahl. Krauser's he's hard to beat, man. He's an animal. David Plummer joining us in hour number two at 11:35. We'll talk more Olympics. We'll be back.
I'll tell you what, we have an outside rusher who is big, strong, fast. He's out of Connecticut. He's done a great job, and I think should have a blow-up year. I think he's going to be special.
Ja Joyner.
Yeah.
All right, guys, that's all
I will not try to outdo Pete with obscure football. Gopher guys, you win. Let's take a break, come back, we'll wrap up hour number one. By the way, hour number two, before we get out here, David Plummer, 2016 Olympic swimmer, is going to join us in the second hour to chat about the Olympics, 11:35. So we'll wrap up hour number one coming up next. Did you watch the 100-meter, I think it was the women's 100-meter final? Yesterday, the woman from St. Lucia, whose name escapes me, she was the first ever St. Lucia athlete to win gold. And I know you love track and field, Pete. And I mean, I'm on, I'm in it too. And I got to, I had the distinct, one of the thrills of my lifetime was watching Usain Bolt run his last race,
yes,
which is the last Olympic race. These athletes are so incredible. And when you watch them in real time, when they do that side camera, I mean, you just don't realize how amazingly fast and just, they're athletes of this caliber. They just look like they've been put together solely for this purpose by a higher power, whatever you believe. It is amazing to me. I love it.
It's staggering. And in every different sport, the different physical things that people are doing is incredible. The one guy we didn't mention is the guy who is three gold medals in a row. No one's ever done that before in the shot put. Out of Portland, Oregon.
Oh, Eric Krauser.
Ryan
Krauser. Yeah.
And how about him setting record after record after record? He is a mammoth guy. Unreal.
Unfortunately, the Minnesotan came in fourth. Peyton Otterdahl out of Rose.
I know. Peyton Otterdahl. Krauser's a... He's hard to beat, man. He's an animal. David Plummer joining us in hour number two at 11:35. We'll talk more Olympics. We'll be back.